the Financial Sense Lifetime Planning Program. Here's your host, Jim Poplava.
Tax season is finally over, and I bet you're probably breathing a sigh of relief. That's one more tax return behind you. But we're going to be talking about something today that you're going to be facing in this decade, and that is higher taxes and inflation. What can you do about it? Joining me on the program from Putnam Investments is Chris Hennessy. Chris, I want to talk about something, gosh, we haven't talked about in almost four decades, and that's bracket creep, which, you know, occurred in the 70s as inflation heated up. As people got cost of living increases, they were increasingly put into higher and higher tax brackets, and we're back at it again. And I wonder if we might address the way the government is doing this by using different inflation rates for indexing your Social Security benefits versus charging you Medicare premiums versus indexing your tax brackets. Let's begin with that.
Yeah, sure, Jim. So I vividly recall those late 70s, 1980s, and what went on then. And so what's going on today, I mean, I always tell people, look, the inflation we're incurring now, it's a tax. That's what it is. But it's a tax across every single American. And whatever the number is, 8.5%, the government has changed the way, the U.S. government has changed the way they compute inflation. I think there was a major change back in around 1980. And of course, that they want to compute it in a way that's favorable to the government because they use it, and you just said it, Jim, for Social Security increases. And then what you're getting, and I think we're seeing this right now, so we're seeing a situation where we're pushing people into a higher tax bracket with their wages have to go up. Of course, the argument is they're not going up fast enough to keep up with inflation. So you get what I call bracket creep. So I'll give you an example. So a married couple can stay in the 24% marginal bracket up until almost, I think it's a little less than $330,000 of taxable income. But then it jumps from 24 to 32%. So that's a big, you know, that's an 8% jump. So that's what's going on right now. So this inflation, it has a gigantic impact. And I know we're going to talk about this, Jim, but I don't think it's going away fast either.
You take a look at the amount of government debt. I think the deficit this year is going to be $1.5 to $2 trillion. We're over $30 trillion in debt. And you talk about, I think the figure is $6 trillion in treasuries are coming due this year. Add another couple trillion in debt. You know, Chris, I don't think the Fed's going to get as far as they think they're going to get with interest rates without crashing the economy.
Right. Well, this is the delicate balance that the Reserve Bank, the Federal Reserve Bank has to play. And you know, the thing that concerns me, Jim, too, is the interest that's going to have to be paid on that debt. So we've for years, we've gotten away with very low 10-year treasury rates. And now we see that going up. So now the interest cost to the U.S. government is going to increase. So how are they going to fund that? I mean, I would say, look, when you have a lot of debt that has to be paid back, you got three choices. One, you can default. Well, we're not going to default. Two, you can partially pay it back. We're not going to do that. So three, you can inflate it away. You always want to pay back debt with inflated dollars, right? And that's exactly what's happened in the environment that we're in. And you got all, as you said, you got all these treasuries coming due. And so I guess the question, Jim, when do we reach the tipping point? If the Fed doesn't, you know, we talk about a soft landing, right? And we might want to talk a little bit more about that to our listeners. But if they go too far with rate increases, and it could tip over this economy. And that's what worries me.
Yeah, I mean, you've got mortgage rates that are approaching 6%, which is killing the housing market. But, you know, the other thing that people don't understand, and let's address this, especially for those that are heading into retirement. As you mentioned, there's a key tax bracket for a married couple that goes from, you know, 22. Well, there's actually a big jump. If you look at a married couple, you have a 12% bracket up to about $83,550. Then it jumps 10 percentage points from 12 to 22.
Right, yep.
And then when you hit 24, there's another big jump of 8% to get to 32. So it's not just that tax bracket. I wonder if we can also talk about the six Medicare brackets. So what I'm thinking of, Chris, is let's say, I don't know, people are taking some capital gains, they're a little concerned about the market, and they're cashing in, and they have a large capital gains bill that hits them. It throws them into not only a higher income tax bracket, but also for those on Medicare, they could get hit with a higher Medicare bracket.
Absolutely. So for, yeah, the Medicare thing is really interesting because they look back 2 years. So your Medicare premium for, let's say, 2022, they're looking back at your income in 2020. So as you get pushed into higher income, the premiums go up. And you really got to think about this in planning. And so a few examples. So for example, let's say you had a large capital gain a couple of years ago, and that's going to push you into a higher Medicare premium. Or you got to be careful when you do a Roth conversion, because Roth conversion is additional income to you. And that could push up your Medicare premium. And you got to remember that you're not eligible for Medicare until age 65. So the key year would be, okay, if I'm turning age 67, now two years ago I was 65, but if I'm turning 65, 2 years ago was 63. So really the year I'm eligible for Medicare, we're going to look back to 2 years back in time, Jim, to determine those Medicare premiums. Now I personally, this is just personal, I get creamed on this because of my income. So you know what? It's my income, not my wife's, but she pays the same Medicare premium I do in a joint return or a joint situation, I should say.
Yeah. So there's two things that can really throw this off. One is Roth conversions. I mean, we're dealing with that right now with a lot of our retirees, Chris, because, you know, we're trying to get them to postpone Social Security to age 70. And for a lot of them, most of their net worth outside their house is in their IRAs or 401ks. And you don't want to get hit with what I call a permanent tax bill when you get age 72, when you have to begin mandatory distributions.
Yeah. And you know, the other thing that's interesting, because we forget about this, it's not only the core Medicare, but it's also the Medicare drug plan. Because it's the same thing. You gotta watch your income. And I just called it up. I'll just give you an example, Jim. So greater than 142,000, less than 170,000, you're talking $272 a month. Your total premium amount is actually high. It's $442. So it's costly. And again, it kind of goes back to where we started the discussion, like on bracket creep. It's the same thing. I always think, and I, you know, planning, and it varies a little bit, but I always think, hey, married couple in retirement on Medicare and a supplemental plan, they got to be looking at least $15,000 a year in medical premium costs, maybe higher in some cases.
And, you know, Chris, it's not just that they're using a lower inflation rate to index taxes, but you take a look at a couple areas of income that they have an index. For example, I think it was 1994 when they put in place the $500,000 and the $250,000 exemption for selling a home. Well, take a look at how much housing inflation we've had since 94. They haven't indexed that, nor have they indexed taxation of your Social Security benefits.
Yeah, and the third one I would add, Jim, is the Medicare premium, the 3.8% tax on investment income.
Yeah.
That tax kicks in at over 250 of income, but it's been 250,000 forever. That number has never been indexed for inflation. And so it's just another clever way. You know, they say, okay, you can tax someone additionally by increasing the marginal rate, but you can also tax them by cutting their deductions or what we're talking about, which is not indexing certain parts of the tax law.
Yeah. So, you know, when you add it all up together, what we've seen happen over the last couple decades, they've dramatically reduced the amount of things that we can take as deductions. That began with Reagan. He got rid of the sales tax deduction, and then they put limits on Medicare deductions. And then Trump comes in, gets rid of state tax deduction, limits property tax, limits and gets rid of miscellaneous deductions. So, slowly but surely, they're taking more and more of your income because you have less to deduct, number one. And number two, they aren't indexing the brackets the way they should for the real inflation rate.
Yeah, exactly, Jim. I call this widening the tax base. So everyone thinks, okay, we got all this debt, got deficits, so we're going to have to increase tax rates. Well, that's true. That could well happen. We could increase marginal tax rates, but we can also widen the tax base. Just as you just mentioned, Trump took away, it's now called the SALT deduction of $10,000, that limit. But who knows in the future what could happen? I mean, you could see more of that, or you could see the Medicare tax we're just talking about go up. You could see payroll taxes go up, Social Security payroll tax go up. All those things could be part of it, because somehow we've got to fund that. We've got to pay back this debt. We've got to pay the interest on the debt, and we have to deal with these deficits.
And those deficits aren't getting any smaller. I was just looking right now. Over the last 12 months, the government has averaged an interest rate on its debt somewhere around 2.2. So, Chris, if you take a look at where treasuries are now, with $6 trillion of debt being rolled over, a 1% increase in interest rates for the government is another $300 billion in interest costs. Now you're talking close to $1 trillion.
That's exactly right. And a stat that I always throw, I show a pie chart, Jim, where I'm saying, okay, like 75, 76%. The entire budget is Medicare, Medicaid, interest on the debt, and Social Security. That's 76% or so of the entire budget of the United States. So eventually, you're not going to have much left over for what? Education, defense, which is a big item. And now you just gave a number, you know, $300 billion more. So interest is going to start to on this debt is going to start to creep up. And that 76% will be well over 80.
Let's talk about what individuals can do to mitigate some of that. And I think the real key, Chris, is two key tax brackets, depending on your income. One is the jump of 10 percentage points from a 12% bracket to 22. That's a big one. So anything over 83 or almost 84,000 married, you jump 10 brackets. And then also that big jump from 24 to 32. So let's talk about what you can do. And let's talk about the taxation of capital gains and dividends and how that's more favorable still, despite all of this, for most people that are retired.
Yeah. So let me throw out a couple examples that are interesting, Jim. I had one case over in Texas, and this gentleman retired at age 62, had a big job in academia. And He had a lot of money that he rolled into an IRA account, but then he said, you know, I'm not going to draw it down until I have to at age 72. So all of a sudden, his tax bracket went from the top bracket down to a much lower bracket, probably 24%. And that's, you know, that 10-year period between age 62 and 72 might be a good time to look at the Roth conversion during that time frame. You know, another thing I say is, okay, we know with some certainty towards the end of the calendar year, let's say it's November, December this year, Jim, what marginal rate we're going to be in for 2022. And then we can make some decisions around that. So we can make decisions on charity. We can make decisions on the Roth conversion and those types of things, because you want to be careful. Like, just looking, I'm looking at the tax rate chart. You don't want to go over that 83,000, and you know that's your 12 and then you don't want to go over the 340 to stay in your 24. So that's just, I think that's just good. That's good planning. And there are special situations. Sometimes you have a business loss. Sometimes you might have high medical costs. So there are special things you can take into consideration.
Yeah. And one of the things that people really need to look at, and I think this is so critical, once you retire and you're right at a lower tax bracket because you don't have a salary anymore, you're just living off either Social Security or investments. But Chris, let's talk for a minute for those individuals that, you know, outside their house, the bulk of their investments are in some kind of a pension plan, a 401k plan, an IRA. And what happens, you know, some of these people have, you know, we have clients with multiple million-dollar pensions between both spouses. And how big of a problem that gets once you turn 72 and as you age.
Yeah, exactly. So I'll give you a great example of that one, Jim. So It's not so much the federal, it's the state level. And you and I have talked about this before. So I happen to be at that magic age of 72 this year. So that means for me, I got to start to pull money out of my IRA, my minimum required distribution. Well, I live in a state, and I won't say where, but I live in a state with a 5% tax rate. So I'm going to be re-domiciled by the end of this year to Florida because I have that distribution coming. Now, not everyone wants to do that, of course, but at the federal level, you're going to have to take the minimum. Actually, the way it works is it's interesting. You hit age 72, and I can take that required minimum distribution by the end of the calendar year, but I actually don't have to take it until April 1st of next year. So one would say, well, why don't you delay it, Chris, until 2023? Because then in 2023, I'm going to have to take two distributions, one for calendar year 2022 and one for calendar year 2023. And that might, we've been talking about tax brackets, right? That might push me into a higher bracket.
Now, let's talk about something that they're proposing. They want to move the minimum distribution age to 73 and eventually 75, I think, after the year 2030, and also reduce the penalties on under-withheld RMDs. Let's talk about that and what that might mean.
Yeah, so I just missed that one. So had I turned 72 next year, I would have been okay. And this is what's part of what's called the SECURE Act. So the SECURE Act 2.0 just passed the House of Representatives on March 29th, a tremendous bipartisan support. It will surely pass the Senate. So now you are going to be able to, if you're in the right age category, of course, push off that required minimum distribution. And if you can do that, it's interesting because you're getting additional tax deferred growth on your investments. So I guess that begs the question, Jim, okay, then what am I going to live on if I'm not pulling money out of my retirement accounts? Well, then you look at other sources of income you might have, other assets you might have in a regular account, a non-retirement account, and maybe you draw those down or you take some capital gains, which of course are taxed at a lower rate, to get that tax deferred growth until you're age 73 or eventually, as you said, calendar year 2030, age 75.
Yeah, one of the issues that we're looking at with our clients, Chris, is do you wait to age 70, which increases your Social Security benefit, or do you take your Social Security at full retirement age, which for most people would be 67, and use those extra 3 years to 4 years to do Roth conversions while you're in a lower bracket? So you're getting Social Security, which you live on, but what you're doing is you're shoveling money out of your regular IRA into a Roth so that when you do get to age 72 or 73, it's not as big. You don't have to take out as much, and you have a source of tax-free income.
Yeah, that could make a lot of sense. Or in a year, for some reason, when your brackets are lower, you begin to pull money out of the IRA accounts, even though you don't have to at that point in time, because you're in a lower bracket, and then you're reducing the RMD. See, the other thing that's kind of interesting, it kind of plays into this discussion, Jim, is the qualified charitable deduction. So, hey, if I hit age 70 and a half and I've got an IRA account and I give to charity, I can use the IRA for those charitable pledges. And then that distribution is not income to me, yet I'm lowering the value a little bit, which is going to lower the future RMDs. The age is confusing because for that one, it's age 70 and a half. Whereas now for a lot of people, their RMD age is 72. And interestingly, Jim, you can do that out of inherited IRA accounts. I got two of them, one for my mom, one for my dad. So I got to take money out every year. So I can use that, direct that to public charities, and that satisfies my RMD for those accounts.
Yeah, you kind of wonder what their thinking is, Chris, because they're moving back the age at which you take a minimum distribution, you know, from 70 and a half to 72 to 73 and eventually 75. And by the same token, they're talking about ways to increase taxes and pushing out this age. What do you think they're trying to do here?
Well, yeah, I get that question. I mean, in one sense, by pushing the age out, of course, you're decreasing revenue to the government because you're not getting the required distributions as early in time. And I think that was simply a balance in putting together the SECURE Act, because that SECURE Act was put together by Richard Neal, Democrat from Massachusetts, who's chairman of House Ways and Means, and Kevin Brady, who's leaving Congress, but he's the minority chair from Texas. And I think it was just some sort of a balance that they came to. It doesn't make sense from a government revenue raising viewpoint. That's very clear. And the other question, Jim, that I get a lot is, if I do a Roth someday, it'll get taxed. I don't know if that comes up with you.
But yeah, it sure does.
Yeah. So, and my response to that is, first of all, if you do a Roth conversion, you can't be taxed again on money you've already paid taxes on. I guess you could be taxed on growth someday, but boy, if we get that desperate, oh my gosh.
Yeah, because you take a look at taxing it once and then taxing it again, and I get that question often too, Chris. Hey, will they tax Roth? And then I give them the example. You remember back in the day when Social Security was non-taxable?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, so yeah. Never underestimate the greed of our politicians. Well, listen, Chris, I want to thank you for coming on the show. But, I say the two big issues, it's amazing. I started my career 40 years ago, and the two issues at that time were taxes and inflation. Inflation was running close to 15%. Top tax rates were at 70. Here we are 40 years later, coming full circle to those very same issues.
I feel exactly the same way, Jim.
All right. Well, listen, my friend, you take care. And enjoy your move to Florida.
Thank you. You too, Jim.
Bye-bye.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.